From the Finley Toyota Studios, it's Cofield and Company.
Welcome to the Hotel Hell. Check-in time is now, check-out time is never.
Does my room have cable?
No. And the sheets are made of fire.
With Steve Cofield.
Well, I don't need to shave because it don't grow in right here. And right here.
Now you're telling me that you were so ingrained with white trash DNA that your facial hair actually grows in on its own, all white trashy like that?
Adam Hill.
Now, young man, what do you want to do with your life?
Actually, Matt, I kind of want to be a writer.
Well, la-di-frickin-da! We got ourselves a writer here!
Chrissy Paradis.
This place is crushing my soul.
On ESPN Las Vegas.
Sir, one more outburst, I will strangle you with my microphone wire. You understand me?
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for us.
All right, here we go. On a Thursday, Cofield and Company, Adam Hill is here. Chrissy, Cofield, lots to track. Remainder of the Masters, we'll get to that inside of 5 minutes. And, of course, your Vegas Golden Knights not flipping the switch last night. So that's coming up in just a little bit. But we got big news around the state for our fans of the folks in the north. Beyond the wall. There should be a wall, shouldn't there? Build that wall! Build that wall! Especially now, if Steve Alford is the coach, and it looks like he is, that is massive news for Reno basketball. It's massive news for the rivalry. Just going to keep saying massive. Enormous! Enormous news!
Giant!
For the Mountain West Conference. And there's a lot of storylines with this guy. So, came out yesterday that he was a strong candidate about 7 o'clock. A lot of people kind of jumped the gun. Said it was done. Negotiating through the night. I'd have to imagine the negotiations were over money. Because, you remember, Eric Musselman just left. Word was from the folks who really cover this thing well, Nevada Sportsnet. I'll remind you, only covers Northern Nevada. Chris Murray, who is really all over the beat, he said they actually got the $2 million per year on Musselman. So if I'm offered, I'm like, $2 million.
That's where we start.
Let's go. Yeah. So we'll see what the terms are. It looks like the press conference is tomorrow.
The latest tweet I saw was deal will be signed today, press conference tomorrow.
Okay.
And offer to be the coach. It's interesting. I mean, I saw somebody tweeted out, and it was one of those, it might have been our favorite guy up there, and I'm not sure, said, can you imagine if you knew at the beginning of the season that UNR and UNLV would both get new coaches, one would be Alford, one would be Otzelberger, and that UNR would have been the one that got Alford? I'm like, you mean the worst one? Is that what you mean? It's the weirdest thing I've ever seen.
I don't think they believe that, and we'll get into the nitty-gritty on this whole thing later in the hour. Dave Hall. Reno guy. Went to UNLV, but Reno. Stuck with Reno. He's a Reno guy.
I know.
I mean, he's branded himself as Vegas, but we know, you know. He's a Reno guy. I mean, I have a picture, an old picture with one of his anchors wearing UNLV gear, and he's making a face. I mean, that's it. That is etched in stone. Dave Hall is a Reno guy, and he's very sensitive about it. So Dave's going to join us in about a half an hour. Here's what Alford could be walking into. The same situation that Otzelberger was walking into. The entire team is like, I'm out. Or at least I'm going to consider my options. Everyone is in the transfer portal. You know, it's funny. I just saw a tweet, and listen, these national college basketball guys do a really good job. And I really like Jeff Goodman. But Goodman sent out a tweet a little while ago pointing out that the top 25 kid that Musselman landed last year, who didn't play, Jordan Brown.
Yeah.
He's going into the portal. He says Steve Alford has an even more daunting rebuilding project on his hands in Reno than anyone anticipated. I was writing out a tweet. I'm like, what's the point? You know what? Who cares? But I'll tell this audience, anyone who's been around the Mountain West Conference would expect many of the Reno players to look up and go, Steve Alford? Like, some might be excited. But those who know him and his reputation, he's a much different coach than Eric Musselman. And here's the bottom line on all of this. Just like with the UNLV players, everyone went into the portal. You know why? Because they came to UNLV because of Marvin Mentes, not because of UNLV.
Right.
Part of it, small part of it, could have been because of UNLV. Trey Woodbury, right? But the majority of the players go to a school because of the coach, and the majority. And you're talking in the Reno program, they're all transfers except Brown, but they're all transfers.
Yeah.
So I mean, they this is like their second or third decision on schools. They came for Musselman. He's gone. You're thinking, wow, what's next? This is going to be interesting to see what he can retain, who bolts, what they find out about the guy, how he comes off on first impression. He's an interesting guy.
Yeah.
He doesn't get along with everyone, Steve Alford.
That is, there's no doubt about that. And, you know, those guys also committed not only to Musselman. And, you know, we've heard the famous story about the Martin twins kind of thought they were going to UNLV.
Well, you know, they thought they were. They thought Reno was Vegas.
Right.
They thought everything in Nevada was Vegas.
Right. And you know, they don't. That's what I'm saying. They don't. They're not buying into Reno or that program in Nevada. They're buying into Musselman because of the success that he's had of taking guys that are transfers and helping them, you know, turn into NBA type prospects. He's an NBA guy. Those guys committed to him, not to the school, not to the city. So it makes a lot of sense. And it's not that much different from here. I think we have to be careful about, you know, overreacting to everybody's out because of Alford, because it's the same thing happened to UNLV, and we were telling people at the time, hey, listen, it's guys exploring their options. They're going to find out who the new coach is, see how they relate with them. It's the same thing there. They're going to see if they like Alford, how they get along with them, and make a decision if they want to come back or not. But a lot of those guys are in different situations that they've already transferred once, and, you know, some of them only have a year or two left. It makes a lot of sense for them to say, yeah, if I only have a year, I don't think I want to spend it learning this new guy and trying to see if he can build something here. I want to go somewhere where, you know, I can turn around quickly and go to the NBA.
Masters leaderboard, round one. We are not going to complain about the stupid policy of not showing the beginning of the round. We'll just give you scores. Tiger Woods, 2 under. Ricky Fowler, 2 under. Phil Mickelson, 2 under. Jason Day, 2 under. Wow, that's a good start, right?
Yeah.
Those guys are tied for 9th. Ian Poulter, 4 under. Adam Scott, UNLV guy, 3 under.
Nice.
John Rahm, 3 under. DJ? All right.
Oh, party time.
Let's do it. He's 3 under. And then two of my favorite stories. I don't know how to say his name. Affy Barnrat?
Okay.
All I know him is fatty fluorescent guy.
Okay.
Built like me, but instead of wearing black to slim, which it doesn't, he actually wears basically highlighter colors, like the markers.
Yeah.
And it's just a giant belly hanging over. He's good, though. He's a talented guy. Soft touch for a big fella.
It's definitely the fat markers, not like the skinny highlighter markers.
Isn't that always special? Yeah. Chrissy, big but gentle.
Like a gentle giant?
Flabby but firm. And the leader is Brooks Koepka, who I was anticipating sucking today. He's 5 under. You know, there was a little controversy before the tournament. Did anyone notice that? Remember that photo he and his girlfriend sent out? It was his girlfriend who's a model, whatever, Instagram chick, you know, with the butt floss, nice arse. And then Koepka in a thong, and they're like, who wore it better? And I think Koepka got really self-conscious. Then apparently he did, was it SI or the body issue for ESPN? One of them. And he wanted to look better because he's not fat. He's pretty big, you know, buff guy for a golfer. But apparently he lost like 25 pounds because he was so vain. And I guess his mushy ass was getting mocked on. Justin Verlander didn't care.
No,
right?
No.
He didn't give a rat's patootie, right? Good picture, though.
That's
good.
Why
you know
table.
What? I don't mind. You remember that picture, right, Chrissy? So it's Verlander.
I'll never forget that.
And
that
then it's Kate Upton with mega side boob. So you give and you take there.
Yeah, but also, he knew nobody was looking at him in that photo, too.
It drew attention. It drew some attention. Every once in a while, you'd glance down. You're like, okay. That can get that?
I
wow.
edited
There's
it
hope.
And screenshotted. And
is that right?
Yeah. So it's only half the photo on my phone. If I saved it, I did.
So Koepka apparently lost weight. He said he lost like 12 to 15 yards off the tee because he lost weight.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? They have length in the course. They years ago, they tiger-proofed it, so it is harder than it used to be. But Augusta's not a banger's course. So to this point, Koepka's been fine, and he's 5 under.
This course works out well for him.
All the beautiful people are doing okay.
Although, will he have the endurance? Will the fatigue get him?
We'll find out.
With less muscle, maybe it actually helps. I think that's an important factor going forward in the rest of the weekend.
Mm. McIlroy, did he threaten anyone today in the crowd? He's won over. Rough break. Spieth, 4 over. That's too bad.
It is a really good leaderboard, though.
Boy, that's tough.
You
feel
just
bad for him.
Down. It's great
through four,
names.
Through 14.
Great names.
Sorry,
great
Jordan.
Stories. It's great.
It is good. I like the look of it right now. A lot. So you could say Koepka, after maybe struggling a bit with the weight loss today, flipped the switch.
Good segue.
Sharks last night flipped the switch. How much further are we going to go with this?
Golden Knights did not.
Lights out! God, what was that?
It wasn't good.
What was that? You know, we're going to break it down on the way back. 364-1100, 364-1100. Be a hockey town. You know, I ranted and raved in the 5 o'clock hour yesterday. I said, I'm done. I'm done with the second year nonsense. I'm done. Let's be a hockey town. All right? You go to the playoffs. A year ago, you made the Stanley Cup Finals. You had cap room. You were expected to add some big ballers. You didn't get John Tavares. You didn't get Erik Karlsson. You got some other good guys, Stastny and Patches and Mark Stone. The expectation should be, especially since we were told with like 20 games left, hey, they're coasting. There's nothing to play for. The expectation should be make the Stanley Cup Finals and win the Stanley Cup. Well, last night, that was terrible. What do you think is going to happen? And are you going to be mad if they can't flip the switch and they just get blown off the ice in this series against the Sharks? 364-1100.
Findlay Toyota. They'll do anything to sell you a car. No Toyota problem is too tough, too large, or too small. Keep your Toyota running like a Toyota. It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Well, look at Pavelski right there. Ties on Merrill. Second support. Burns keeps it in. And then just drive to the front of the net. Off some bodies. Boy, it looks like it may have hit Pavelski up high.
It did. It hit him in the face.
Hits Pavelski in the face. Oh, my. Sure does. Right up high. And you pay a price in the playoffs.
That was goal number one. Maybe a little bit lucky. Beyond that, you couldn't say anything the Sharks did was lucky. They just outplayed.
Yeah.
VGK and Gallant said it afterwards. We just got outplayed. He pointed mostly to effort. I can't imagine it was all a story about effort, but they're down 1-0. The Shark Tank is a very difficult spot to play. And I know you pointed out that if you made a checklist of everything that, hey, these are the goals, like the Golden Knights didn't do anything they wanted to do.
No. They wanted first and foremost they wanted to make sure they got pressure on Martin Jones, get pucks on net, get traffic around him, create chaos in front of the net because he has struggled this year. His numbers were not good at all. Get in his head.
The worst goalie in the entire league in the regular season.
He's been, you know, of the, you know, the 16 starting goaltenders in the playoffs, he's ranked 16th in almost every category. He struggled a lot throughout the year. He's been pulled in 4 of his previous 13 starts against the Golden Knights in particular. So get in his head and get in his head early.
How many shots did they get off in 2 periods?
10. 5 in the first, 5 in the second. So
and
10
the
shots.
First period, they went, what, the last 11 minutes of the first period without a shot.
Yeah, so that was goal number one. Goal number two, the Sharks are incredible on the power play. Stay out of the penalty box.
And they ran it all night.
And they basically went there like
what it was it for the game? Was it 26 shots on goal for the Knights and 34 minutes in the box?
Well, that's a little skewed because there was 2 10-minute misconducts right at the end of the game. But still, I mean, they were going there like it was, you know, like a luxury suite that they wanted to hang out in. It just kept, you know, marching over to the box. Like, you're not supposed to be there. It's not good. And you kept putting the Sharks on the power play. That was goal number two. Didn't get that accomplished either. None of it. None of the things that they wanted to do. Oh, and then manage the puck. that was embarrassing. I mean, it was just turnover after turnover, unforced error after unforced error, and the Sharks caught some of them, but most of them were just the Knights being sloppy with the puck. So those were the three biggest goals they talked about, and they failed on all three.
364-1100, 364-1100. Richie wants in on ESPN Las Vegas. Richie.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good, man.
Good. Yeah, I mean, I agree with what you guys are saying. Sloppy puck control. But I think, in my perspective, when it all comes down to it, what it was 5-2, their first goal was, and that was just a lucky goal, bounced off the dude's face and went in. All right, what do you do about that? Then you had the empty netter. You take away those two, it's a 2-3 game. We had a couple posts that we hit. We also had, Stone damn near had a hat trick if he didn't whiff on that first one in the first period. I think we had plenty of opportunities. Yeah, sloppy puck control. Yeah, we didn't have a lot of shots on goal, and we spent a ton of time in the box. But I think for as bad as we played, to really kind of be a little bit close when you take away the lucky shot in the empty netter, I think that they did all right. I mean, we found ourselves in this situation last year against Winnipeg in game one, but game two is going to be a huge – I mean, we'll see how they respond in game two, which I'm pretty sure they will.
Yeah.
All right, Richie, thank you.
Good point. Now, I'll say on
– You didn't think that was going too soft on him? I saw you roll your eyes. That it was only 3-2.
A little. Well, I mean, because you then the Sharks would have played differently in the third period had it been a closer game. I mean, you can. I just don't like saying those things. Well, if this doesn't happen, then it could have been this. Yeah, but they would have also played differently. The thing about the lucky goal, and you know, I agree, it was a very lucky goal. But that's why so often we talk about, especially in the playoffs, get the puck to the net, get traffic in front, create chaos in front of the net, because those things tend to happen when you're doing that. And the Sharks controlled the first period. They didn't get rewarded for it in terms of a goal, but they got enough shots on net that eventually a puck that was going to sail high over the net and be no problem hits Pavelski in the face and goes in the net. And yeah, it's a lucky goal, but that's what happens when you're creating traffic and, you know, creating chaos in front of the net and creating chances like that. Those things tend to happen. So that's why the fact that the Golden Knights couldn't do any of that is troubling, because you're not going to get those lucky breaks if you're not putting the puck on the net and you're not getting guys in front and disrupting Jones. And the issue that I think, while it's one game, and while your goal when you go on the road to start the series is to split those first two games, they haven't lost anything yet. They're fine. They can come back, rally, win game two. That's fine. One thing they absolutely missed an opportunity at was to really get in Jones' head, to really, you know, affect him and impact him, because now all of a sudden he settled in the first two periods, he made some plays in the third period, and now he's got a win, and now all of that kind of goes away, and he can say, well, I'm settled into the series a little bit, I'm established, I didn't get pulled from that game, I got a win for our team. Though you didn't take advantage of that opportunity to really rattle him early in the series. Not that it's totally gone, but that is a big opportunity squandered right now that they weren't able to do that to Jones.
364-1100, 364-1100. Chrissy's phone question of the day is, will you be disappointed with a first-round exit? Chrissy actually put up a poll question yesterday with no option beyond VGK winning. How many games will it take VGK to finish off the Sharks? 4, 5, 6, 7. There wasn't a will they lose. That's how confident she was. So, if you were going to answer the question, 364-1100, 364-1100, if they lose in the first round, sounds like Chrissy would be pissed.
Yeah, if she
I does. Wonder how many other people would be pissed off.
Yeah, I'm very interested in this, and we'll...
Like, if the honeymoon period is over, and there's now expectations for the team, which, by the way, there's nothing wrong with that. As I laid out yesterday in the 5 o'clock hour, and again, to start the show today, you had a Stanley Cup finalist with cap room, add three significant players, bring back pretty much the entire core, actually sign a lot of them because, hey, this we love this team so much, we're going forward with this. Well, that team has to get past the first round. And I'm not saying the series is over, but that team has to get past the first round.
Yeah, I'm interested to see especially what the disappointment would be and if it's disappointment or anger. Because last night, I got the sense from...
Were you seeing anger on Twitter?
No. Apathy. Again.
Oh.
And that's what I expected, and that's what I saw. And so, like, this town is about winning, and they like winners, and they support winners, and they're all about it. And when you're not, they don't care about you. And that's what it seemed like last night. I felt like people were checked out. In fact, there was some craziness at the end of the game that almost turned into fights. And I was looking through, you know, VGK fan Twitter, as I like to, and I just saw nothing. And I was like, they're not even watching. I don't think people are watching the game right now. I think they turned it off in the third period, which is insane. But I think they did. So I am interested to hear, if they lose in the first round and if this continues, are you disappointed? Are you angry? Or do you not care? Which I'm sure nobody will call and say, I just don't care. Because if you don't care, you're probably not calling. But yeah, I'm interested to see how people will react to that.
Tyler is in next on Cofield and Company. What do you think, Tyler?
Yeah, I actually agree with some of your statements there that maybe there's people who are not following it to the end. But I do want to put it in perspective because the Sharks, they're one of the teams to have picked to win it all, to win the Stanley Cup. So to draw them in the first round, I think that's going to be a tough measuring stick regardless of what happens.
Yeah. I mean, I think
is that what we're going to lean on? That's the crutch? Hey, the playoff system, the way they break it down sucks. You are favored in the series coming in, or a pick 'em.
Yeah,
with out home ice.
Yeah.
Win the round.
Yeah, and I know that, you know, Gerard Gallant said he just does not care about the playoff format. You can't even get a response from him out of it. He said, you play who you play. We knew who we were going to play before the season started. You know, we knew wherever we finished, that's who we're going to play, and that's how it's set up. So I think, you know, that's a weird one to look at because that's just how the system is. I'm sure Boston and Toronto people feel the same way. Like, why are we playing each other? Why is this a first-round series? But that's how the format is, and you kind of know that going in.
3-6-4-1-100. Sounds like we're freaking out. Adam's not freaking out. We're just asking, hey, what's going to be your reaction if the Knights fizzle and can't flip the switch and lose in the first round of the playoffs? And I think most of the town is going to be okay with it because they're a second-year team, and I just don't – I think the whole thing was reset last year when you reached the Stanley Cup final. You're a legit contender. You had a chance to have a big offseason. I still think the last 20 games or so were a wasted opportunity to be ready for the playoffs. I'm not sure they're ready. Bill is up on this Thursday. Hey, Bill.
Hey, how's it going?
What do you
think,
Bill?
I'm furious.
You're furious?
I am furious.
Good. Good.
Not so much. I mean, if you lose a game in game one of a series and you get some bad bounces and stuff, I think this is a much better loss, if you want to put it that way, than the Tampa Bay loss, because they got up to a 3-0 lead and fell asleep and let the other team come back and win. We just got our asses kicked from beginning to end. But all that time that he was saying, yeah, we got it under control, we're just resting guys, we want to get everybody completely healthy for the playoffs, right after we had that huge spike in momentum after we got stoned from the trade deadline. And I don't want to get into the Fleury thing, whether it was an injury or the baby's birth or whatever.
Hold on one second.
Okay.
But we do need to get into that.
Yep. Okay.
That is part of this story, because if Fleury doesn't play well in this series, and I think you can look at the season and you're like, the way they managed this guy all year was a little bit weird. Coming out playing like 98% of the time, and then end of the season, you're like, okay, he's not going to play at all. Like, what? That gets him ready? Like, we were afraid he was going to be fatigued, and now we're afraid he's not sharp.
Well, if you remember when we came up to the last two games, they said, okay, he'll probably play the game at home, and then they were going to give him the game off in L.A. too, but we played so badly, they figured, well, he better play again just to face some more rubber. But, I mean, we had such a strong, push right there after we had the Stone trade, and Fleury was playing the best he had played all year, and I get it. You want to be home with your wife and kid, and that's great for three or four games, but come on, man, this is your job. Let's get back in the rotation again. Subban was starting to drown out there, and whether he's, 25 or 32 or 40, you just can't always flip that switch on. And we were just starting to get that chemistry built between that second line with Stone and Stastny and
Pacioretty,
thank you. And then Patches gets nicked up a little bit, then Stastny gets nicked up a little bit. There was never a time when those three got to get that chemistry built back together. And then every time they interviewed Gallant, he was like, you know, we got under control. We just want to be 100% completely healthy. Meanwhile, San Jose is on a seven-game losing streak. We could have been picking up points all that time along. And don't tell me that, you know, everybody says home ice advantage doesn't mean anything in the playoffs in hockey. It does mean it here. We have an advantage here, and we are in that team's head. And like you said, Adam, if we would have put priority one on jumping out and skating as fast as we could and putting as much pressure on him in the first 10 minutes of the game, we could have broken Jones mentally right away, and they got nobody to go to but Aaron Dell, and that's a disaster. So, yeah, I'm furious the way they came out. They looked like they were just skating around for the first 10, 15 minutes. Like, oh, there's another turnover. Oh, I guess the turnover, we better grab that guy because he's getting away, another penalty. And they were, you know, they were even the more physical team, in my opinion, and there's no way that should be happening. So I'm furious. I want to see them coming out with their hair on fire on Friday night, or I'm going to be – the West sets up perfectly this year. If we beat them – the biggest obstacle is Calgary, and I know we can get Mike Smith's head. He's a joke. So, anyway, that's my rant.
Good job,
so.
Bill.
Thank you, Bill.
364-1100.
Yeah, we got a lot of people to get to, so we can address the Fleury stuff later. But there is a lot to that, and you know, I do think he was hurt. So I don't think it was an issue of just missing time for the baby.
Jack is on ESPN Las Vegas. What's up, Jack?
Afternoon. Just wanted to comment a couple things on the game. You were talking about the sloppy play, but haven't they been playing sloppy for a little while now? I mean, watching the games, even some of the, you know, the games they win, the passing and the way they control the puck when they get the pass have not really been that good.
Yeah, I mean, I think they've been...
Have they been sloppy?
They've been sloppy for a couple weeks, yeah. And I think that was a lot of, you know... It was a lot of, hey, down the stretch, they're resting. They're just trying to get healthy. They're trying to get ready for the playoffs. They weren't concerned about results. They were just kind of – but, they were talking about it. They were saying, hey, we are developing bad habits that we don't want to develop. We have to get back to, you know, playing how we want to play and going hard because, you know, we don't want to settle into those bad habits. But they did that – you know, that Arizona game was abysmal near the end of the year, and then they didn't fix a whole lot against the Kings in the finale. So they weren't going in playing the way they wanted to. And it kind of carried over into the playoffs.
Johnny's with us. Hey, Johnny.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, so, Johnny.
Yeah, I'd be pretty disappointed if we didn't make it out this first round. I feel we did it. We went further last year with some maybe lesser players. We had, you know, Neil and Perron, and we got some better acquisition this year with Stone, Pacioretty, Stastny, and I feel the expectation is a little bit, maybe not the Stanley Cup playoffs, so it's kind of like riding a wave, but definitely making it out of the first round is a must for this year.
All right, Johnny. And when you look at it, the Sharks are good, but the Sharks didn't have the season they wanted, and the Jets were the other big nemesis. It seems like the Jets took a few steps back.
Yeah.
So the West was set up better this year than it was last year.
Oh, for sure. But it is a weird matchup, and we talked about the playoff format. The Sharks are the best team in the West. They are. They didn't finish there because they weren't healthy for the last month and a half. Eric Carlson didn't play. They had other guys missing time as well. Pavelski missed.
They were healthy
games.
Last night.
They did, and that's the other side of this when we say, hey, when you just try to rest and just get yourself healthy and then decide to flip the switch for the playoffs, you can't do that. Well, the Sharks did do it. And the funny thing is Pete DeBoer was talking about that before game one. He said, you know, people are criticizing us for resting and trying to get healthy instead of focusing on results the last month and a half. He said, if we come out and play terribly, you'll say, hey, we took it too easy down the stretch and we weren't able to flip the switch. And if we do great, you'll say, hey, that was brilliant. They got themselves ready, which is absolutely true. And in the Knights' case, they weren't able to flip the switch and we're criticizing them for maybe taking it easy. And if they would have played really well, we would have said, hey, that was a great strategy down the stretch.
Mark is up on Cofield & Company. Hey, Mark.
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Good. What's up, man?
So my thing is, I guess the question on disappointment is, I don't know. We'll see. I always want to see how we play. You know, I mean, if we lose a good, hard-fought match, a series to a better team, win or lose, it doesn't. I mean, it matters in the end. But that's when I'll tell you if I'm disappointed or not. But my question is, you know, we played San Jose well all year. What did they do different that we couldn't adjust to? Because it looked like it was a minor league hockey team. If we got the puck deep in behind our goal, We just turned it back over. They kept it inside in their zone and just kept attacking. We couldn't do anything all night long.
Yeah, I think, well, I think, what did they do differently? It wasn't a whole lot. They did have their whole team, which has not really been the case for the most part of the year. And it was a lot of self-inflicted wounds by the Knights, just turning the puck over. Now, there was one where Erik Karlsson made a really clean pick in the defensive zone. That was in the 3-on-3. It led to a goal by Burns. Like, that was just a really, really good play that he made. But there was, I think, struggles, and especially struggles by the defenders. I mean, Nick Holden was not good yesterday. Derek England has been a step slow for a while, but he was like three steps slow yesterday. Nate Schmidt was awful. And that, you know, you can't have some of your best players playing that badly at this point of the season, and he just was not good. And certainly we're going to also be able to talk about the decision that the Golden Knights made. They have seven defensive players for six spots, and they sit one of their highest paid players in Colin Miller. Should he have been in the game? And I guess we'll find out if they thought that was a mistake when they have their game two lineup tomorrow.
Continue the Cofield and Company conversation on Facebook. Friend us at ESPN Las Vegas. It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Lots of players in the blue ice, and look out. Here we go after the whistle. Derek England into it. England going after Evander Kane. Puts him right up against the glass. Linesman trying to pull them apart. Fedor had knocked over one man. Karlsson was trying to pull the puck away, and then England dove on top of Kane in the skirmish. Kane got up and then grabbed England at the side of the head.
Well, however long this series lasts between the Golden Knights and the Sharks, it's going to be physical. Rivalries in sports are freaking awesome. So it looks like tomorrow around 1:30. I like this report from Chris Murray of Nevada Sportsnet. He said, according to his sources in the band, that's pretty good. Well, because they're going to be there.
Of course.
So they're telling them, they're like, yeah, we're supposed to be ready to play at 1:30. So Steve Alford looks like he's going to be announced tomorrow. New coach at Reno. 1:30. And I'm telling you right now, I don't truly have a dog in the fight, although I will root for UNLV over Reno. But if I were at Reno, one of the things I would insist on Steve Alford doing is bring every one of those New Mexico Red Jackets and light them on fire at 1:42. Like, just plant the flag, you know, a la Ohio State and Michigan. Like, we hate them to the south. I didn't like them when I was at New Mexico. These Red Jackets, just light them up. Dave Hall is a guy who's conflicted. He makes his money in Las Vegas, but we know his heart's in Reno. Dave, how you doing?
I'm well, fellas. How you doing?
Do you like my plan of burning Red Jackets about 12, 14 minutes into the press conference?
I do. Do you think he still owns all those Red Jackets?
Yes.
Do you think, like, he's got this mansion, you know, in L.A. from all that UCLA money, that he's got, like, one of those huge walk-in closets that's got, like, a whole rack of his New Mexico Red Jackets?
Dave, think about you went to school there. You know Reno. Think about what his buyout's $3.6 million. Think about if he doesn't spend all of his other money, you know, just the buyout's going to go to a house. And then actually, he doesn't have to have the closets in the house, just a big closet out back. This guy's so rich by Reno standards.
Oh, I mean, he could probably buy one of the casinos downtown in Reno.
Okay.
It's worth the money. And I think that's part of the reason they landed him is because he's still getting paid by UCLA. So
that's awesome.
Nevada probably didn't have to, we don't know the contract details yet, but they probably don't have to pay him as much as they might have would have because UCLA is still paying the guy.
He's got
the Howard Hughes of college basketball coaching. I'm going to buy a casino and live in it.
Well, he's also got all those nets that he cut down and wore around his neck somewhere.
Yeah.
He should bring a few of those tomorrow as well. Yeah.
So, I've seen mostly good reaction from Wolfpack fans. What's your reaction to landing Steve Alford?
You know, when I first heard about it a couple nights ago that this was a real possibility and it was quickly gaining steam, I was like, "Wow, like this is great." Like, you know, this is probably as good as we could have possibly hoped for. And then over the last 24 hours, as it looks like this was becoming more and more of a sure thing, and all of the Wolfpack players, one by one, are now putting themselves in the transfer portal, which has become a thing in college basketball over the last couple of years. Like, literally, almost every single guy they have left has put their name in the portal. Now, you guys know that doesn't mean they're leaving, but it just puts that option out there. So I'm like, oh my God. So, you know, you wonder, have these guys heard things about Steve Alford to scare him off, or are they just protecting, you know, their own best interests, which of course they should be. So my initial excitement has been slowly bleeding out as I'm watching all these guys putting their names into these portals, because if all these guys leave, he's got nothing to work with. I mean, we're talking Marvin Menzies 3 years ago at UNLV. There will be nothing left for him.
So your original excitement was there even though we know so much about him and his character and personality from his time in New Mexico?
Oh, man, you're digging in already, aren't you, Hill?
Well, Adam, Dave, before you comment, and we're talking to Dave Hall of Fox 5, give the audience a couple of things that you remember or you know about Alford that would suggest, hey, not the greatest guy.
Well, certainly has made some enemies with, you know, local legends. Like Robert Smith, by treating him very poorly when his kid was playing there, and just, you know, the day-to-day relationships with him and the interactions with him were just so bad for most people around the league. You know, the reputation is certainly there, so it was surprising that your first reaction was to be kind of excited.
And I know he's like a well-known curmudgeon. And he's had some issues in the past. I know, you know, he had a kid in Iowa who had a lot of problems, and he probably didn't handle that situation too well. And I know UCLA fans were not sad to see him go as well.
No.
So that's why, you know, initially you're like, oh, Steve Alford, hey, that's a big name. I've heard of him. He coached at UCLA. Cool, you know, because at Nevada, we're used to getting coaches most people have never heard of.
Right.
And so Steve Alford is at least a known quantity who has had a decent amount of success, especially in the Mountain West. So yeah, I mean, he comes with baggage, but you know, when you're trying to fill that coaching job in Reno, Nevada, and you don't have a whole lot of money to pay a guy, you know, I thought that's probably as good as they're going to do in terms of getting a known commodity, a known coach.
I agree with you. I think it's a great hire. It's a home run. You're gonna have to deal with his personality. He's not Musselman, but in the end, who cares? If he's winning, and this first group, we'll see what he has, because they may not be his types of players, but when he has a chance to recruit, he's going to have a good team. This is a gigantic get for Reno.
Yeah, I thought so too, and you know, I know a lot of people, you know, when Musselman left, it was no big surprise. Honestly, I think most Pac fans were delighted that we kept him for 4 years, because there was talks of him leaving after year two, so the fact that we got 4 years out of him was great. And then we're like, okay, you know, back to irrelevance. You know, if anybody in your audience can name the coach before Musselman at Nevada, I would be shocked. It was David Carter, by the way.
Yes.
So, you know, that's the kind of coaches we typically get at Nevada. It's usually a retread or some young up-and-coming guy who once in a while does a great thing like Trent Johnson did about 10 years ago.
You had Mark Fox, too. I mean, you're acting like little sisters of the poor. You've had some good coaches.
Right, but they've been cultivated there,
right,
is what I'm saying.
Okay.
Like Trent Johnson built his resume there and then springboarded off to other jobs. Mark Fox was his assistant and then took over, and then he springboarded off to bigger jobs where he didn't really have any success, by the way. So, and neither did Trent Johnson. Like, both of their career highlights have been in Reno, and it'll be interesting to see how Musselman does in his new SEC job, because it's not the Mountain West. We all know that.
Dave, do you think that fan base needs more of an ambassador type to stir people up and help sell tickets? Because I'm not saying Alford's not going to do any of that, but he's certainly not going to do what Must did from an energy standpoint. You know, if he kind of goes in like, hey, you know, come on out, see us, and doesn't really do a whole lot in the community,
right,
I wonder how that goes over.
Well, I mean, maybe after burning his red jacket tomorrow at the press conference, he's going to rip off his shirt and have his wife, I don't even know if he's married, but whoever, with the magic marker, write, you know, 2020 Mountain West champs, and then the fans will love him. Now, of course, that's not going to happen. But, yeah, not Musselman, obviously. And but I think what Musselman has already built it, so it's there. Now, his job is to just not screw it up. So, you know, if he just has to win. He doesn't have to win as much as Musselman did initially, but, you know, it can't go off the cliff, you know, like it did with Marvin. He has to keep, you know, they have to remain relevant, at least compete for a Mountain West title and a berth in the tournament. If he doesn't, you know, he's going to run into problems fast. And fan apathy, like it does here, sets in real fast up in Reno as well.
I'm interested in the timeline. You're saying this year, because I'm not going to pretend to understand the mind of a Reno person. That's something I never want to touch.
Wait. Is that a pot shot? Was that a pot shot?
Yes.
That was a pot shot.
Yes, it was.
Okay.
All right. But yeah, is that? I mean, are those expectations there right away, or does he get a little time to try to build something there? Because obviously the expectations are high because of what's happened the last few years. But it is a new program.
I mean, it is. You know, a lot of people don't know, but I mean, they had a ton of guys coming back who sit out transfers. They got like a top five JC guy who signed. Plus, you know, the McDonald's All-American that didn't play this year, which was a sore spot for a lot of Wolfpack fans. Jordan Brown, maybe the best recruit they've ever landed, and Musselman didn't even play him this year. But, I mean, this kid has a world of potential. So they had all the pieces to at least, you know, compete for a top three in the Mountain West again. I'm not saying that would happen, but the pieces were there, plus whatever recruits, you know, they were going to bring in or transfers this offseason. So, yeah, I mean, at this point, it really depends how many of these guys stay and leave. You know, I think that's Alford's number one job. Is the second he steps off the dais at that press conference, he needs to go win those guys over, or he, like I said before, he is starting from zero.
Will he lose people if he doesn't do that? If he just says, hey, listen, these guys want to leave. They want to go on and do their thing. We're going to build our own program here. Will the fan base abandon him immediately?
I don't know that they'll abandon him, but that would be a big red flag right away because, I mean, I hate to compare it to, like, the heyday of UNLV and Tark, but because it's certainly not that level. But for Reno, like, the love affair between that city and that basketball team, I mean, they lived and died. And I did too, by the way. I haven't been that emotionally attached to a team in a long time. So we lived and died with every game. And so, you know, the players that are coming back, like, the fans still have a deep love for these guys. And if they were to leave, and if they were to leave because of Alford, I mean, that would definitely be getting things off on the wrong foot for sure.
Dave Hall, Fox 5 with us. We never talk about other stuff around Vegas. So let's close on at least one other thing around Vegas. Have you been out to the new ballpark yet?
I haven't, but I can't wait to. I mean, it looks gorgeous. It looks gorgeous when we show it every morning on TV.
I don't know where you live. Do you live on the west side or do you live out south of town?
I live out in Henderson, right off by Black Mountain.
Okay. So, you know, speak for people in Henderson. What do you think about the stadium where it is?
In Summerlin?
Yeah. Is it a giant pain in the ass?
Yeah. I mean, of course. I mean, from my house to there is probably a half-hour drive, add in another 15 minutes.
I was going
to
say,
have you
driven on the west side on the 215? Because they're getting ready. They're getting ready to smoke the whole thing and start expanding it.
Yeah, no, I have. I have. All my friends actually still live out there. Anytime, it may not be, you know, exactly out here, but, I mean, just think about it. I say it all the time on the news, like how much the sports environment in Las Vegas has changed over the last 2 years. It is absolutely incredibly insane how quickly we've morphed into this incredible sports city. And, you know, we've got the new Raider Stadium coming in. That Sphere, whatever the hell that thing's going to be, is coming in. It's just crazy, you know. And we all know an NBA team isn't far behind. So, it's, you know, we went from pretty much nothing to a sports, you know, we're a sports, major sports city almost overnight. It's just crazy. It's so cool to be part of it.
So what's coming up tomorrow on Fox 5? Like a fun Friday morning theme. What's the big theme tomorrow?
Well, you know, game two, Golden Knights, tomorrow night. Game one, that didn't go well. As I was joking this morning, anytime a guy scores a goal off his face, you just know it's not going to be your night. we'll definitely be, you know, our sports team, Kevin and Vince Epiens are both in San Jose, and so we'll have a lot of Golden Knights coverage and, you know, whatever else pops
Wait,
up.
Come on, what do you mean, whatever else? Well, one of the biggest events of the year is going down on Sunday. You're not going to dress up like, I don't know, gigantic Tyrion Lannister or Jon Snow? What are you doing? You got to go Game of Thrones all morning.
Yeah, I'm more of a Khal Drogo kind of guy. I don't have the body. I don't have the physique, but I try to pretend that I do.
Maybe can Mike Doria be Tyrion Lannister?
I think he already is.
There you go. Another heightist that we bring on the show. These big guys. Everyone else is a midget. Everyone else is little.
Tyrion's got him by a few inches.
Yeah, is that right? Wow, okay. Wow, really lobbing out the bombs for Dory. We got you all hyped up with the UNLV Reno rivalry. Now you're going after your coworkers. Yeah. Very nice.
You guys are good at that. You guys are getting me all fired up and riled up.
I know, we get you out of character. Such a friendly, happy guy in the mornings. He comes off our show, and he's firing on all cylinders.
It's always good to talk to you guys.
All right, Dave. We'll talk to you in a few weeks. I hope everyone returns to that roster. It would be great. Good luck.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure you really hope for that. But thank you.
There you go. Dave Hall, Fox 5. They're not going to do Game of Thrones.
Different network. Believe
me. Cares?
If it was a Fox show, they would be all in.
It's a big Fox show. I don't know.
Oh, Simpsons? Still on?
All right, coming up next, we'll get back to the Vegas Golden Knights. The fabulous play-by-play voice on radio of the Knights, Dan Duva, is on the way.
Continue the Cofield & Company conversation on Facebook. Friend us at ESPN Las Vegas.